Hi, today's November 5th, 2023. This is MobileViews Podcast 484, and I've got a bunch of old friends here with me to start out, to kick off our 15th anniversary month of MobileViews Podcast, which had a different name in the old days. But before we get started, I just want to thank again University of Hawaii President David Lasner for taking time to speak with me two podcasts ago on October 27th. And I mentioned this, I thank him again because he was in the news recently with a surprise announcement that he's going to personally pledge $1 million to the University of Hawaii for their $1 billion fundraising campaign. And his $1 million is specifically going to be targeted to support graduate students working in areas of AI, machine learning, or data science in service to the environment or humanity for Hawaii. So I thought that was a pretty awesome piece of news for somebody that was on our podcast lately and or recently. So thank you, President Lasner, for doing that for the graduate students at the University of Hawaii. Alrighty, as I mentioned, back in late November, I think it was like November 28th, right after Thanksgiving in 2008, if I'm doing the math right, I started this podcast because I was a full-time blogger at the time. That was my only job. And it didn't last long, but boy, was it fun. And one of the things I did, because I had a set number of things to post every day, was I started doing podcasts as a way to have something to post. I could usually do two posts from one podcast because there'd be podcast posts and maybe a news post after, related to it. So it was a good way to get news and produce some output. So that's how this thing started. And so I wanted to talk to some of my old friends about some of the stuff that's going on then and now. And one thing, at least, that we all have in common is we're all Microsoft Windows CE MVPs, which is sort of an honorary title. We were not employees. And somebody posted, I forget who, in one of our private mailing lists, that Windows CE is coming to the end of support after 26 years. And a moment of silence for what was a beloved OS for all of us, I think. I remember being at Comdex when it was announced back in, 94 or so. And I love that platform. In fact, I'm doing my Swedish death cleaning, as I keep telling John. And I still have all my handheld PCs, and Sven's holding one up. In fact, I'm going to do a screenshot so that we can memorialize Sven. I don't know why I'm not showing up in Google Meet, but at any rate.
Yeah, but does it turn on?
That's a trick, isn't it?
I'm just thinking about all of the companies that have CE connected devices on the back end in logistics and things like that really don't probably want to upgrade anytime soon, but they've had a system that works for 20 years and they're fine with it. We forget about these companies that if it ain't broke, don't fix it, because that's downtime and that time is money.
Yeah, for us, yeah. Windows CE was a consumer device, but Sven's holding up a functional, I'll take another photo, a functioning Windows CE handheld device. It is powering on, the screen is on. And I was going to say, we think of it as a consumer device, like the handheld PCs and pocket PCs, but as the good Dr. Westfall is mentioning, a lot of it, whatever remains are probably in gas pumps and cash registers and, as I recall, milk pumping machines. And those folks don't like to upgrade because it costs money and it doesn't give them anything in value in return. So I feel bad for them, but it is, that's what's happening.
It amuses me when you see every so often people stockpiling old hardware because they know, Steven, always fixer will break. That's why we have security updates and patches. I guess, but it's real hard to argue with a company that says, I've got a non-internet connected Windows 95 machine running this production line. And if we just stockpile three more of these things in the back, we're good for the next 20 years, And it's a hard argument.
Before I forget, I didn't introduce everybody. So Todd Agasawara, the good Dr. John Westfall, Sven Johansson, we heard from briefly. Frank McPherson is here. We haven't had Frank here in a while, but he was actually on podcast number 2, I think, back in the day, and Stephen Hughes. So welcome, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to join us for our 15th anniversary month. Yeah, so Windows CE, bye-bye. You know, we hardly knew you. The consumer
still
side
kind
of
fine. Just because I'm not getting updates doesn't matter. I'm holding on to it.
I got to go check if mine boot up. I was going to say, you know, I've been doing Swedish death cleaning. I've got rid of a whole bunch of stuff, but I have not been able to take my Windows CE handheld PCs to e-waste. I took a bunch of laptops and, you know, all kinds of stuff, but not the handheld PCs yet.
Honestly, I think my biggest challenge would be to match up a power adapter to whatever device I would find, because I didn't organize them, keep them together.
I think I labeled mine with a Dymo labeler or something back in the day. So, and a lot of them have the they weren't generic adapters; they're branded like NEC or HP. So at least you have a fighting chance.
They're proprietary.
I know we had a lot of They're all proprietary. Yeah, that was. That was a lot of fun. Speaking of laptops, the other thing that's gone away is the touch bar for MacBook Pros. And, you know, I made a lot of fun of the touch bar when it first came out. But after I got one with my 2019 MacBook Pro, I became a fan. So I'm a little disappointed that it's going away.
In theory, I'm a fan as well, because at work now I use my MacBook open more than closed. And so I see it, but I don't find myself actually using it.
Really?
So it looks cool, I use it. But I don't use it that often. Having the function row keys back would be just as effective as what I have. So I'm sad to see it go because it looked cool and it had potential. But then I have to be honest with myself, I didn't use it.
Yeah.
I think one thing that was noted on the Mac Break Weekly was that not even Apple really liked the thing. They had the initial release of it, and they never did anything with it again.
Huh.
So for three models of it, the API and everything never changed.
Wow.
So it was like if they didn't do anything with it, nobody else seemed to, software-wise programmers, said, why should I bother? So what it shipped with was what it died with.
Well, I am using my 2019 MacBook Pro right now with Touch Bar, and I use it to control the volume and brightness, and I'm pretty happy with it, to be honest. So farewell to the Touch Bar as well. I only have one MacBook that ever had it, the one I'm using right in front of me. And it's, like I said, it's 2019 model, I think, pre-pandemic MacBook. So I suspect it will not get an upgrade in another couple of years and will need to be retired or run Linux on it or something. It's, you know, it's still, I got to say that my 2019 MacBook Pro, although it runs as hot as, insert your favorite hot thing here, although it runs really warm, it's like 100 something degrees now if I brought a thermal scanner here to take a look at it, thermometer, infrared thermometer. But it even though it runs hot, it runs well as a, what is it now, 5-year-old machine or something, 4-year-old machine. So I'll be sad when it goes away. I do have a MacBook Air running with an M1 that runs much cooler that I use for other things. Okay, so... So I went back to take a look at the first couple of podcasts from November and December 2008, the first podcast. When this was not called Mobile Views, it was called Mobile Apps Today or Media Bistro Podcast. Or basically, it was the blogging company that I was working for. And one of the questions that came up is $9.99 too expensive for an iPhone app? Actually, 99 cent was the question back then. You know, a lot of people said, oh, we lost Steven. Oh, there he is. 99 cents was considered, anything more than 99 cents was considered expensive for an iPhone app in the early days. But and then Frank had a T-Mobile, the first Android phone, the G1. And so we had a podcast, I think, pretty much just on that, to hear what Frank had to say. I bought one and I returned it within the 14-day return cycle because it would, like, the battery would die, like, by lunchtime. I remember Frank bought a giant external battery wart for it, or maybe a plug-in. I can't remember which. So his was lasting all day. But
no,
Frank, you remember the G1?
Battery. Yeah, was it? Yes, and that was an extended battery. So you replaced the built-in battery with a much physically larger extended battery. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it served not only as extra power, but also as a weapon in self-defense.
I was gonna say emergency boat anchor.
There was an old joke about a Russian guy Yeah, there was an old joke about a Russian guy that had the very first smartwatch, and everybody was looking at it, and then somebody asked him, what's the wire going down to the briefcase? He says, that's the battery.
Yeah, you know, we it's kind of funny now, but, you know, when you think about the old non-smartphones, the bricks and so forth, they were huge. They literally could be used as a weapon, a blunt force instrument, if you will.
Well, and the biggest, one of the biggest reasons why that phone existed in its form factor is because it had a physical keyboard. And back then, as you're harking back to the handheld PCs, you recall one of the big debates was the value or the necessity of a physical keyboard. Right. The iPhone that you referred to obviously did not. That was the change, was the use of the on-screen keyboard that then not a lot of people had fully bought into conceptually. Today, well, every device we use is an on-screen keyboard, so we see who won that debate.
Yeah, and didn't not only did it have
a... Think about how Android 1.0 didn't even have an on-screen keyboard. That was because the only device that was out was the G1. So it had a physical keyboard. On-screen keyboard did not come until later versions of Android.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, actually. The physical keyboard pulled down, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. And it not only had a physical QWERTY keyboard, it had a little trackball, which I thought, I like the trackball. I still like the trackball idea, actually, for phones. I wish some of the keyboards for the iPad came with a trackball instead of trackpad, but oh well. I know most people like, and I prefer trackpads to trackballs in most cases, but for a mobile device, it makes a lot of sense to, you know, keep the square inches down, the foot, literal footprint. And then I did a piece on, you know, I did a glowing piece on netbooks back then. Little did I know that would disappear really fast. But, you know, I still have netbooks. That's one of the other things I haven't been able to get myself to throw away. I've got a bunch of Asus and Acer and notebooks. And I've got the, remember the one laptop per child? OLC?
Yeah.
OLPC?
Yeah. OLPC.
Yeah, I still got my green and white OLPC running some variant of Linux. I think it was a variant of Red Hat.
Poor child is missing their laptop that you took.
No, don't you remember?
Oh, no, no. When you bought one, you bought two. One went to a child and one went to you.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, basically. Todd could have been altruistic and given both.
Well, I was going to have my daughter, who was then very young, try it, but she didn't like it. She wanted a Mac. But
well,
yeah,
I would say, you know, when you look at the netbooks, though, Todd, they had an influence on the notebook market. You could basically say that before then, the idea of a low-cost notebook or laptop computer was practically non-existent.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, today, one would be tempted to find a line from, say, netbook to Chromebook. It's not that tidy, but the financial concept is, I think, most closely related. And so that's probably one of the biggest values of the netbook.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, not I think you're right. I agree with you. You are right. And it did have that saving grace about it to have made that influence. And I, for one, I'm glad, even though I have my grumps about, I use net Chromebooks every day. And although I have a grumps about its durability, basically I've got three that have essentially died on me after a couple of years. They are not that expensive, you know. They're $300 to $500, so it's not cheap, but it's not expensive like, say, buying a MacBook or a high-end Windows laptop. So,
and the other interesting thing about those, the very first ones shipped with a version of Linux, and if you think about it now, the idea then of using Linux as an operating system for a consumer device was, there was a lot of friction against that. Today,
Chromebooks, that
the Linux or the kernel, whether it's Chromebook or Android, right, is probably the number one handheld or mobile operating system in the world.
Yeah, I've got a, gosh, who made it? I've got a netbook that shipped, as you said, with Linux.
Was it Asus?
The one with the hand crank.
Asus EEPC, the very first one.
Yeah. Now, the hand crank was OLPC. Although mine didn't have a hand crank, but I think you could get it in some models.
OS on that was probably a variation of Linux as well, though, just because of the licensing of Windows at the time was pretty expensive.
Yes. Yeah, the way, in fact, the way it happened, if I recall, with netbooks, is the early netbooks were all Linux, and then people were kind of, you know, somehow putting Windows on it without approval, so to speak. And Microsoft finally gave in and licensed it because they didn't want to license Windows to any small, cheap netbooks, as I recall. But then they finally gave in to demand, and their partners started making netbooks shipping with Windows, of which I bought several, kind of the Chromebooks of their time in price. And, although they're much more durable than the Chromebooks. I think all of my netbooks could probably still boot. Batteries are probably dead, but, you know, the screens are intact. I've had two out of three Chromebooks that went bad. The screens went bad, among other things. So, uh-oh, Frank's pulling out something out of a bag. Which one is that, Frank?
This is, I think, the second generation. This is an EEE PC. This might have been that original one, actually.
Yeah, with Linux on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, this was another weapon.
Yeah, they're pretty. The batteries are pretty heavy back then. I think they're still lead acid.
This one I actually still have the power supply with.
Oh yeah, I labeled my power supply for my netbooks too. So I should go try some. I think I booted a few of them up last year when I started my Swedish death cleaning. The other thing that happened in that 15 years ago in November, December time period is I had my late friend, Mike Morton, who was part of the dev team for Google Earth for iPhone, and his manager and a handler from their public affairs group to make sure they didn't say anything untoward, I guess, speak with me and talk about Google Earth for iPhone. I don't even know if Google Earth for iPhone still exists. It was in parallel with Google Maps, by the way. Or was it before Google Maps? I can't remember now. But it was pretty cool to have Google Earth running on an iPhone. They did a spectacular job, in my opinion, porting that thing over to the iPhone. And did any of you remember Smule, Smule? They had some really popular music apps.
Karaoke thing, right?
Yeah, they made like Ocarina. Yeah, they did. They did a singing one. I can't remember what it is.
T-Pain.
And they did Ocarina. Yes, I am T-Pain. Yeah. Where they do basically a not a vocoder, but what do you call that thing?
Auto-tune.
Auto-tune. They used their version of auto-tune to fix your voice. That was really popular. I remember a lot of interest in that. I had their co-founder CTO on several times talking about it. And then we were so desperate for cool looking apps that I remember Koipon from the Blimps Pilot for iPhone. It was not a game. It was just a Koipon, you know, graphic simulation that was just fun to watch. I mean, I enjoyed it on the iPhone. And I think if I recall correctly, the dev team for the Blimp Pilots dev team, they're like four fellas. They came from like some big multiplayer game company and just were doing this as a side project.
Stuff like that looked really good on the Surface coffee table.
Yeah,
that's right.
So you could,
yes, I almost forgot about Surface. Steven popped out. Yeah, hopefully he'll come back. Or is he still in? I should note that the way we've got... Oh, Steven's still there.
He's still
muted in Adobe Podcast. So the way we're doing this is because I really like the way Adobe Podcast Studio records. The way we're handling this is Adobe Studio Podcast has no video. And it's nice to see people when you speak with them. So you get some visual cues. And so we're using Google Meet with microphones muted to provide the visuals for each other, since we only record the audio. I'm recording over Adobe Podcast Studio. So I see Steven is muted over in podcast, but he's disappeared from Meet, and that's fine, as long as we can hear him when he wants to chime in. And then the other thing that came up was the reason I switched from, not Windows Mobile, but Windows Phone to iPhone, was because when Microsoft, in their infinite wisdom, moved from Windows Mobile to Windows Phone, they made it completely backward incompatible. None of the apps from from Windows Phone, Windows Mobile run on Windows Phone, including a bunch of really great apps from Ilium Software that I depended on for securing passwords and taking notes. And so I said, well, they're on iPhone, so I guess I'll stop using Windows Phone and go to iPhone. And that was that. Like, that was the end of my relationship with something I had been very seriously involved in for many years at that point, well over a decade. And then I had a whole article on the Apple's in-ear earbuds with remote, well, basically volume control and microphone, because that was a big deal back then. You had to buy it separately. The earbuds that shipped to the iPhone were just earbuds, maybe with a microphone, I forget. Maybe they were just earbuds. And so this was fancy because it had volume controls and a microphone. And it was like $30 that you had to spend in addition to the iPhone. And finally, I don't know if you guys remember 12seconds.tv. It predated TikTok and, you know, other short form videos and lets you do like 12 seconds, a little bit more, maybe 12, 15 seconds of video. And I used to do it for quick video clips, like, hey, I just got this new app and this is what it looks like kind of thing. And I posted with my blog over on Mobile Apps Today. So that was really great. I was sad when they eventually disappeared. There are literally
back in other forms now, short form videos.
What's that?
And now video format that people use. So
right.
There's other ones.
They're way ahead of their time.
Out there as well too, which was pretty, like, it was like 8 second clips, and that's when people actually started getting into it. And
right.
And then YouTube actually started booming after that, which is kind of interesting.
Right. Was Vine?
It was a third party. I think it might have gotten bought up by Twitter. I can't remember. It's so long ago.
Okay. Yeah, I remember. I don't think I used it.
Yeah, not X.
When it was still Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, those are sort of my recollections from 15 years ago. Swen, you got a couple of things in our show notes list, I see.
Yeah, they don't really tie into the Wayback Machine. I spend a little time out on Facebook as my one social thing, and people are all up in arms about several things on the new Macs, and I thought they were kind of amusing, so I kind of poke at people with them. But the two that seem to be really bothering people is, if you get an M1 or an M2 or an M3, the very latest, hottest thing, and on a laptop, on a new MacBook, it'll only support one external monitor. That's it.
That's a problem.
And they're just, that's what people think. It's a problem because the M3 Pro and the M3 Max will support like four. Why can't I?
I'm sure you can.
I put more than one on my M1?
I'm sure you can.
And the answer is just the chip
can
doesn't.
Can you do like a workaround with like a docking station? Resolution or?
Yeah, the software stuff that you use, I think you can do it with that. But to me, it's one of those things. If you're buying the very lowest end Mac that you possibly can, are you hooking, you know, two 6K external monitors to this poor thing?
Yeah.
And if you really need that space, get a 45-inch monitor.
Or you can probably have your external monitor to your MacBook and use an iPad as your second external monitor. That could probably work.
It may be able to do that.
Yeah.
But then it's, you know, the one external monitor it does do supports a 6K monitor. I mean,
that's twice
the cost of the Mac itself. You know? Other than to complain, I don't know what the market is for, you know, multiple monitors on the low end Mac.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because as John and I have commented frequently over the years, a lot of the, and I don't know who are saying this on, you know, if they're just your friends or they're like bloggers.
Oh, just random people.
I've noticed that the techie bloggers are really fussy. Like when Apple switched from, you know, whatever they're using previously to Retina displays, you know, it's like, oh my God, the old displays scratched my eyes out. And I'm thinking, it looks okay to me. I mean, or when people are complaining that, oh, it doesn't handle, you know, 120 hertz refresh and it's, you know, the blinking is giving me a headache. Like, what blinking? What are you looking at? It looks fine. Some people are just very fussy, Swen. That's the conclusion.
Yes.
Well, Swen, you said, who knows how many people are doing that? Apple does.
Yes, they do.
So it's always interesting to me where you see this. Well, I can't understand why they would do this with this model. They have analytics data that tells them how many people with that particular base entry model would actually want to do some of those things. I'm sure that's on telemetrics, is how many times did someone with that model try to plug in two or more displays and get a message saying, no, you can't do this. So if that number is, you know, less than 1% of the users that bought that SKU, you're not going to worry about that 1%. But all the, you know, the 50% users that always are plugging in 17 monitors, they're going to go and complain about their poor brethren that can't plug in more than two.
Well, let's go around the table and see. Steve, how many monitors do you typically use at work
home at one time? I use one large 43-inch display, and I have a 29-inch vertically mounted on the side for like running streaming code. And I might pop up a second monitor on my laptop, but all my hardware runs DisplayLink hardware with software drivers. That's been around for about at least 2 decades or something like that. And it's now supported just by station. You can always buy a USB-C hub. It supports DisplayLink, and that's the way to get around it. I mean, it works with M1 chips, M2 chips, and I'm sure it'll work with the M3. So that's how I know most people do who do video production and stuff like that too. They all use that.
That all works with all three of them, but to actually support the chip itself doesn't support anymore other than you're using DisplayLink or something like that. So if you're on a laptop, it's the laptop screen and one external. If you're using a Mac Mini with an M3, it's two screens.
I saw Sven light up when Steve mentioned he had a 43-inch display. What brand
are you using? I was looking at like doing widescreen, but I like putting multiple windows. I can run side by side on a large display. It's so much easier than having the CMAs have multiple monitors linked together in like a grid pattern, and it looked like a stockbroker on steroids. But it was just so much easier to just go to a single display and have a higher resolution. So I like it. It's easier on the eyes too.
And Sven, how about you?
My wife has the same, I think, Dell 43-inch. It's when you walk into our office, it's like looking at a car window. You know, it really is. Mine's 34, and I have one on the side here, but I only have, I don't know why I have that. It's just there. So I hardly ever look at it. I might put music on it or something. So
And Frank, I know you've got yours, based on watching you move your head, I assume you've got displays on top of the other versus side by side. Am I correct there?
Yeah. So basically, I have a 32-inch BenQ that I use as my main display, and I connect notebooks to it. Normally during the workday, my notebook computer is to the left, but I'm, you know, in my personal mode here with my MacBook Air sitting in front of it. So that's why you see me reference it the way it is. But I wanted a 32-inch screen so I could put two kind of, you know, 16-inch, if you will, side-by-side windows, and that's kind of how I work throughout the workday.
And John, how about you?
I have been both at work and at home on just a 27-inch Apple Cinema display from 2010. So it hasn't died on me yet, and occasionally I'll open the laptop and use that second screen, but generally I can get everything I need crammed into 27-inch and be fine with that.
Well, you know, and as for me, I spend most of the day on an iPad these days since I don't have actual work to do. And the only time I open a second display is like now when we're doing a podcast, so I can see our show notes in one screen and y'all in another. And I still have some space left over to monitor Adobe Podcasts and make sure the sound is being recorded. So I have the simplest setup. When I do use, I've got a 13-inch MacBook Pro display in front of me right now. And I also have a 13-inch MacBook Air when I'm not using the MacBook Pro. And it's a bunch of Chromebooks of various sizes. And the external display, I have one of those portable, I think it's a 15-inch monitor, maybe 16. You know, that can be powered by USB-C, that kind of thing. And I've got that just sitting on a tablet stand next to my MacBook when I need a second monitor to like edit the audio or, you know, do the post processing stuff. So I have the simplest of all. The setups, and I don't have a giant screen, mostly because I have such a small house. I would not know where to put a 43-inch monitor. that would not drive my wife crazy. Like, why did you put that there?
She saw mine. She had a small widescreen one. She's like, oh, now I see why you got that, because you have the pages aren't cut off, so you get an extreme war display. I'm like, yep. Like, I want one too. The next thing I knew is one arrived at the door the next day. Sitting on a standing desk.
And how did you guys mount yours, by the way? Is it sitting on a stand that it comes with, or did you put a Visa mount?
You can hook up, it's got a ton of USB-C ports too, so you can, if you want to hook up your phones to it, you can easily do that. You can do remote display, any other device. It's nice. Tons of ports.
Yeah. And the next item Sven's going to bring up, which actually does harken back to 15 years ago when we were shooting, you know, tiny low-res videos and stuff, is something I was going to bring up too. Go ahead, Sven, because I have some thoughts about that too.
Yeah, on the 30-minute Apple infomercial that they did last Monday night, at the very end of it, there's a little blurb that says, shot on an iPhone. And that's another thing that's getting a lot of traffic out there is, you know, do people really believe that there was a guy hand holding an iPhone?
He's probably using a Black Magic.
On his MacBook Air at a Starbucks. No, they shot it.
PC, right?
They shot it on an iPhone.
Yeah.
The video came out of an iPhone. Everything else is done exactly the way they do it with a, you know, $50,000 red camera. But it was shot on an iPhone. I mean, that's absolutely true. And I got links in that I put in there for one is the Apple actually put out a video after this that showed how they shot it. And that's pretty short, but it's kind of interesting. You look at it and you look at it.
Is that shot on an iPhone too?
Look at all that stuff they're using.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They had Steadicam rigs and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Probably.
No, I don't think so. I think that was, but then, MacBreak Weekly, who's got a guy on there, Alex Lindsay, who's a really video production guy. They went through that video kind of frame by frame, and he explained everything that was in there. I was fascinating to hear a professional talk about what they were using. And he has the same thing. It was shot on an iPhone but they used everything else that a video production studio. I mean, they had like 4x6-inch lights. 4x6
LED
foot
controllable panel lights control, yeah.
Out there.
Yeah,
you
know?
Yeah.
But it was shot on an iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but
it was interesting to watch, you know.
Yeah. The lesson they're is, lying. Right? If you can afford.
They're
using Black
Camera. No, actually, they didn't use
it. Because I find like the Black Camera app actually works better than the iPhone app for video recording on the iPhones. And I think a lot of people have as well, too. And it's like, it's pretty amazing. It taps into all the technical aspects of the camera.
Yeah, there was a behind the scenes video, I think from Apple also. And they said they were using Black Magic.
The iPhone. I posted the link there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was something. So basically the lesson is, Sven, if you spend, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 for iPhone Pro or Pro Max, and you have $250,000 for everything else they have, you too can shoot one of those videos that look like that.
Yes. Or the other way of looking at it is you have the iPhone, you can shoot the video and then hand it to somebody that has $100,000 worth of equipment to post-process it.
Well, it wasn't just post-processing. The actual, you know, in on-prem equipment that they were using was like you said, the giant lights and the Steadicam, and it was pretty quite a setup. The microphones,
booms, and everything.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, that was a lot of money tied up there.
There is something interesting, though, to me about the people that get angry about that. You know, it's not shot on iPhone.
You're a psychologist, right?
Yeah. And it's the same sort of anger that I see when one platform has envy over another platform or, you know, something like that, where it's like, well, how, you know, I'm just angry that that's better than what I have, or I want my guy to be doing better, you know. So it struck me as the same sort of anger with, I've talked about before, the Apple Watch, where when it came out, a bunch of people did not want it to be successful because they didn't want Apple to be able to crack the smartwatch market that up until then had just been niche products like Pebble and a few others that had, you know, gotten some traction. Right. It was no. No one wants a smartwatch. I remember those headlines repeatedly. And then Apple kind of cracked that market open. And now I think it's the same thing where it's like, well, no, I don't want them to be shooting that just on an iPhone because I want, you know, whatever my company is, I want them to be shooting things on the same consumer grade stuff that they're selling us, and they're not. Or, it's just a weird psychological thing of zero sum mentality of like, if they're winning, then my team is losing, even though there's no evidence for that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They have to lose so I can win. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's almost like there are people that would really love to be able to say, no, they're lying. That wasn't shot on an iPhone. I mean,
yeah. Well, I know.
What does it matter what they shot it on? They can shoot on whatever they want.
A Quaker Oats pinhole camera.
You know, I have a $30 selfie stick with a remote trigger, so, and an iPhone 15 Pro Max. So I'll go and try to duplicate it.
The reality is, I think you could probably do a similar thing with a Pixel. They got some tremendous cameras too.
Yeah.
I think the only thing iPhone 15 has advantage of is it has that built-in ability to record straight out to an external drive.
Yeah.
I don't think any of the Androids do that at this point. I don't know.
No. In fact, Android can't even handle an external display correctly yet. And my Pixel tablet, for example, you plug in a USB-C monitor and nothing happens.
Yeah.
So kind of sad. Oh, I think Steven just posted a...
yeah, it's really good.
Linked it.
That's one of my favorite apps that's come out. So.
Oh, yeah.
If you're into video.
It's free also, which is amazing.
You just do standard video. Nice. Just regular video.
What do you use it for,
Steven?
It's
better than the Apple app.
Are you just for fun or are you using it for...
Which is nice.
Wow. I just downloaded... I heard about it a while back, but I only downloaded it yesterday. While I was thinking about that... You know what Swin was just talking about the iPhone's Scary Fast event filmed on iPhone.
Yeah, if you're
downloaded it, have not tried it.
You take digital film.
Oh, right.
it works very similar to it. You have zebra effects on it too, which is kind of nice. So if you want to do that type of autofocus, grid lines, rule of thirds, all that stuff that you do, standard ISO settings, you can also import in filters and as well as any of the ICMY information you have from other different cameras. You want to simulate that type of imaging or filter effect. It's pretty cool, very advanced. I don't know why Android or Apple hasn't done that. I mean, they can make it a pro version and charge people for it. I mean, like they already kind of do with their hardware, so why not why with the software as well? But that's what the pros really want. And I guess they want to dumb it down, use AI for everything.
Yeah, and as we come to the end of our podcast, Swin has one more item, which actually
Yeah, because since you started, I thought I'd go through some of my old stuff and try to get, pare down a bit. I'm closer to it being important than you are, but disposing of old tech—that's not a simple thing.
No,
especially if you've been around for 30 some years in the same house, and every 2 years you buy a new desktop and you take the old one and put it in the crawl space, and so now you have 12 old towers sitting around, 13 old laptops, and all of them have drives in them that you're not sure what's on them. So, but trying to figure out what you do with it and who you trust, in some cases, it'll actually cost you money. We got one place here that actually says they pay 10 cents per pound for your towers, laptops, and servers. They do want them complete. You can take the drives out of them if you want. They'll crush your drives for $8 a drive if you're worried about it. I mean, grind them up.
Yeah.
It's 50 cents a pound for most other stuff that you're paying them to get rid of this stuff. And I've got all kinds of PCI cards that are, USB cards and audio cards and video cards that have been replaced, and they're just sitting in boxes.
Yep.
I had a Mad Dog video card that was never unshrink wrapped. It's just it.
What's
it was
a Mad Dog video card? I don't remember that
brand. I think Mad Dog was a brand.
Yeah.
But it was a high end video card at the time.
As a matter of fact, there's there's some nonprofits here in Hawaii that have e-waste events generally at K-12 schools. And there was just one yesterday morning that's a couple of miles from my home. So I spent the last week on my second e-waste roundup in my home, and I got
some
printers from the 1980s, among other things. No, but I did fill up my trunk. I have a small car, but I filled up what space I have in my trunk with. I think I took a half a dozen keyboards and Some with the DIN connectors, they weren't even, you know, USB. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I took a Dreamcast keyboard down, if you guys remember the Sega Dreamcast, which I really enjoyed playing with.
Yeah.
Ran Windows CE.
Did the kids wonder the electronics you brought down? Did the kids wonder the electronics you brought down? Because we did one at our high school, and they're all like, what is this?
No. Well, you know, the kids were manning the front of the line where you enter, just asking, you know, what if you're in the right place, and you know what you had, and then it was adults helping you on the back end. So you know, and adults just didn't, which is fine. Mm-hmm. they're probably just moms and dads there to help, you know. So that was cool, but yeah. So I got another trunk full of stuff gone. So I've freed up a couple of cubic feet in my home. A bunch of old boards. Like I think I had a MIDI board and, you know, some really fun stuff, actually. I found an Ethernet cardboard and some I/O boards and, you know, stuff I can't use because I have nothing to plug them into. They probably still work fine, but they are all gone. And I still got some handheld PCs and OLPC and some netbooks that I just can't emotionally detach from yet, but the day will come. Maybe in 2024. These e-waste events near me are about every 6 months. They're more further, you know, away from me, which I'm too lazy to drive to. I don't want to drive more than 5 miles, basically, to and from combined. So twice a year I gather stuff. I've been for the last 6 months, actually. First one was earlier this year. And now I've been gathering stuff up and to prepare for the day of the next e-waste event within 5 miles of my home. So, and Steve just mentioned.
Yeah, Staples has a deal too. Your local office supply store, that if you have one near you, they do e-cycle rates, and they actually pay you money back for it too. They used to give you $10 for every visit of e-waste. Now I think it's like about $5 per computer.
Nice.
Yeah, so you only get one per month, kind of like the battery club from Radio Shack back in the day. So you only get one $10 credit per person though, so you can actually do add it up and get some more paper. Yeah, if you have it for kids or get another printed cartridge,
send your
whatever. Kids. And they also do printed cartridge recycling as well. Battery recycling. If you have batteries, you should always recycle those at a place somewhere near you, like home hardware store does it now. I think like Home Depot, Lowe's, they'll also recycle any batteries that you have too. So just rather throw them into the garbage dumps near you. You want to recycle those properly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I did my UPS's first e-waste round in the spring. So those have been gone for a little while. Even those are hard to get rid of. And pulling some of the hard drives out of the laptop.
How many magnifying glasses and small pen?
I had a type. I had a Dell Inspiron. Was it Inspiron? Yeah, I was an Inspiron. That had like 14 million, tiny little screws. And then, and my sister-in-law is getting rid of an old MacBook. Mm-hmm. And so I had to go find a pentalobe screwdriver for that thing.
Lookalike fix-it kit.
Which was a lot of fun. To get those out. What's that? Yeah, exactly. I had one of those little kits around with a pentalobe screwdriver, so yay me. But lots of fun getting rid of stuff, freeing up some space. I got more stuff to get rid of. It's funny, you know, I just got a Blu-ray external drive that I'm reviewing. And I was looking for my Blu-ray discs, and I can't find them. And I said, "Did I get them
away?" I can send you a few. I got a bunch.
But, I might not have anything tested with, but
at least I moved with.
But anyhow, anyone want to add any more?
No, it's been a wonderful period of time.
Anything else to add?
Because all the technology that's happened in these past few years is astounding. No. Then the more it just happens in a few months is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been pretty wild what the last 15 years has brought us. Yeah. Okay, last question. And we'll have you guys back in our 15th anniversary month. But in case you can't make it in the following week, Steve, what's on your wish list for the holiday season, if anything?
I just hope people will learn a little bit more about AI. What did it mean?
Oh, Steve, you hear me?
I think people just learn a little bit more about AI. Yeah, tech-wise, I'm pretty much standard. I just want people to learn more about cybersecurity and artificial intelligence. And
yeah. Yep, we can hear you fine.
I mean, that's like a big thing right now, too. And you're talking about
Yeah, especially cybersecurity. Holy cow, there's so much stuff. I mean, they're like professional cybersecurity, you know, entities have been hacked.
And like, was it like Dave Lesnar you were talking before?
Nope. Steve's breaking up just a little, just a teeny tiny bit. Not sure why.
How about now? Clear.
Oh, Steve's breaking up again.
Okay.
Yep, you're okay now. Yep. Okay, and let's see. Sven, anything on your list? You buy everything.
No. Yeah, well, I'm finding out how much stuff I have. Going through the death cloning thing, I've got things that, you know, I can get a new lease on because, you know, I've never played with it, so. I'm pretending it's new. Wow. I got this new CE thing, little laptop thing that's really cool.
Wow.
So nothing. I really would like a 14-inch MacBook, but I can't justify doing it. I've got an M1 with the touch bar, and I don't get it out that often. So
yeah. Okay. And John?
I have random things, but they're not very interesting. a smart kettle, so I don't have to walk across my house to get my water going in the morning for coffee. It's something if someone else were to buy me, I'd upgrade. But otherwise, I'm just getting more exercise. Some Apple Watch bands for my Apple Watch Ultra, which, as a follow up to last week, if you remember my Apple Watch Ultra crazy story about the battery drain issue, Mac Rumors is now reporting that there will be a patch fairly soon because this issue has gotten big enough now that Apple is at least internally admitting it happens. And I was on the phone twice this week after I got my replacement watch with Apple Engineering, where they were asking me more questions about how I had gotten the battery drain issue to happen. So they are very interested internally about what exactly was going on with this issue themselves, which I guess is not reassuring really, but also good that they're reaching out to users and asking questions. So that was my interesting week of talking to Apple Engineering.
Okay. And finally, Frank.
I don't really have a need right now or any, you know, big burning tech item.
I hear you.
That I'm looking for. My main purchase this year was the upgrade to the Pixel 7a. And so I'm set in phones and set in tablets for a while.
Yeah, my wish list doesn't exist, so I'm not getting. I'm obviously not going to be able to get one. I want a folding Mac iPad Mini. But
Well, on the foldable market, I think I saw an ad now that there is a Motorola flip foldable that's in the $600 to $700 price range.
Oh, wow!
So that's big news in terms of just the price going down. Yeah. And I think that's once the pricing and that goes down, I think foldables will start getting a lot more interest for people.
Yeah.
So it's still, that's the emerging market right now on mobile, it appears. So,
yeah, I should note, I don't need a foldable. I just want one.
So watch, they'll announce one next week, Todd, and then you'll have to decide how you're going to get it.
Yeah, that happens to me. I should note that, you know, I just realized now as we end the podcast that I've been recording off the MacBook Pro mic instead of my Yealink headphone. The sound has been coming out of my headphone, and I didn't bother to check where the input was going. So hopefully Adobe Podcast Studio Beta can clean up my voice since it was going on a subpar microphone. But any rate, I just want to thank everybody for being able to join John and me for the start of this 15th anniversary podcast or podcast 15th anniversary. It's a lot of fun talking to you. Well, hopefully we'll talk to you again in the next couple of weeks as we continue down, well, not just memory road, but also what's ahead, what you guys are doing now. I'm kind of jealous about this whole 43-inch monitor thing, but I'm trying to, you know, not be too envious. And anyway, thank you, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Alrighty.